Recording of Mrs. Doris Hearn made on the 26th of November 2008.
I'm Doris Phillips and I was born in Portsmouth in 1908, and my name is now Mrs. Doris Hearn. I trained as a midwife at the Hampshire County Council, and I was trained in Padstow in London, and I did my district training down in the Docks of London. And after training and passing, I came back to Hampshire and I was allocated as an interview at Rowland's Castle, where I came for an interview. Well, when I came to Rowland's Castle, Dr. Way was the Doctor at Horne Dean, and Dr. Norman and Dr. Dewis were at Havant, and Dr. Ricketts was at Emsworth, and we all worked very well together. We did have no doctor surgeries in the village, just once a week on a Friday morning. So if you needed a doctor any other time, you either had to go to Horne Dean or Havant to see them. And the work was very varied, and of course I had a 15-mile radius on a bicycle. So times were quite hard, but there was no other transport in those days.
Where was your boundary? How far did you go?
Oh, to Berriton.
Really?
Bushel's Farms. God. That's just out in Isworth, on the way to Chalton. Yes. I didn't actually go into Chalton.
Yes.
I think the other place. And of course down to all over Rowland's Castle,
yes, yes.
And down Woodbury Lane in the Hampshire area. Stop. Well, when you had your pregnant mothers, we never had antenatal clinics in those days. We did our own antenatal work, except if you felt there was any difficulty, you then issued forms and a doctor would see them. But we didn't have a doctor at deliveries unless there was a complication, and then we had to issue triplicate forms for a doctor to come. But so often they were perfectly simple cases. We didn't seem to have the complications in those days we get today. Life, I think, was much harder, but it was much simpler.
Did you ever deliver twins?
No, never twins. Otherwise, I really, it was all very satisfactory. I was really very, very fortunate. Of course, I had district work to do. I had to attend other people for the various doctors for different ailments and different dressings and things.
Yes, yes.
And I had to, I was in lodgings, and then I had to leave a slate with the places where I was calling and about what time, so that if any new person cycled up, they could see it on the slate where I was and they could follow me up.
And can you tell us where the lodgings were?
I was, at first I stayed with the postmaster, Mr. and Mrs. Burgess, who was postmaster of the village green. And then when it wasn't convenient because of their family growing, I stayed with Mrs. Thatcher in Castle Road.
She was a widow, was she?
Yes.
And she fed you?
Yes, yes, I was in lodgings.
Yes.
And my pay in those days was £3 a week, and I paid 35 shillings for board and lodgings, and then I had to pay my own laundry as well.
And did you have to buy your own bicycle?
No, they supplied the bicycle. Mm. And of course they supplied the uniform. And I think it was here 3.5 years or 4, and then I moved on to Sussex because the pay was so much better there, and I had a motor car and a cottage because I could already drive. Stop. What else to say? Well, Mrs. Mills lived up on the Horne Dean Road, and she had 6 children, and in those days the children just played in the harvest fields, and unfortunately one afternoon one of her daughters fell in front of the harvester and she lost a limb below the knee. It was a very sad occasion. The Dr. Way was called, and of course she had to go to hospital. But she recovered very well and adjusted to her artificial limb very well indeed. And the other case was the shop in Bose Hill. One day, a little boy of four ran out of his house right under the bus, and unfortunately he was killed and nothing could be done about it. He was right under the bus outside their door, which is very, very sad. Stop. Well, I left Rowlands Castle to go into Sussex, where I worked for the West Sussex County in various places. And then I came back after I'd married the minister's wife. Married the minister's wife. And I came back to Rowlands Castle when I married a minister's son here.
And what was he called?
He was called John Hearne, and his father was the Reverend F. Hearne. And my husband went into partnership with Mr. Wigington, who owned the village shop at the corner. It was a very big grocer's shop, included a bakehouse for the old Bunt ovens, and we had a licensed slaughterhouse and a butcher shop, and we had pens by the side of the premises. And Mr. Noble, the butcher, he would go to Chichester and buy his animals and bring them back and put them in the paddocks, and then they weren't slaughtered till they were rested, and he was satisfied he was going to have good meat. And of course George Baker, he was our master baker, and both of men had boys to help. And of course during the war, when the butcher's assistant was called up, I had to go into the butcher's shop and help him. And of course we had a big country round with a van, and so when the man was called up for the war, the new one, I had to teach to drive as well as do the business. And then when it was the turn that the baker's assistant was called up, I had to go into the bakehouse and help them and teach the new man to drive. And I'd also taught my husband. So while I was here, I taught 9 men to drive. They all passed the first time but one. And this young man, I said, why on earth did you fail? And he said, because I had to do my 3-part turn with my blind eye. And I said, good gracious me, you didn't tell me you had a blind eye. I would never have given you lessons. I'd just lose my license if it was known. Anyhow, he took it the second time and passed. So everybody was quite happy. Stop. Well, I suppose we must have gone down about 7:30 in the morning. It was quite early, because we had to put the orders up. And in those days, we had our assistants who went out in the morning to call on Bose Hill and Leakes Lane, and they would call on houses to get any orders that the people wanted.
And some of the houses had maids in them?
Yes. And then they would bring the orders back to the shop and then put them up, and then they were delivered by the van. Or in those days, we had one van on the road and we had 4 bicycles, bicycles with a basket in front, like open all hours. And they were really very, very good boys. They came down from school and they did part of the delivery that was local. And one especially was called Stan Barlow, and he came down, and one day my husband found him busy, and he said, what are you doing? He said, oh, the chain's broken, I'm just repairing it. And from that day he looked after all the bicycles and he worked for us. And when he left school he came to us and he was our assistant, and we trained him in the grocery trade. And of course when we gave up, when the International took over, Stan Barlow stayed with International, and we had got a business in Leon the Solent, and he was not at all happy with International. And so he came over to Leon the Solent and worked for us, and my husband said, well, if you like to take the grocer's master certificate, perhaps you'd like to come in as a partner, which he did. He lived in Stansted Road. And so he came over to Lee, and he went in for his master's degree, and he got it. And he was our partner for some years, and then that was it. Stop. Because I don't know what else. Yes. Well, our master baker was George Farr. He lived in the cottage adjoining the shop. And he was a master baker, and most beautiful bread he used to make. And it used to be delivered in the van with all the other groceries and all the feeding stuff. And Mr. Noble was our master butcher and slaughterman. And he was an excellent butcher, because people used to come from miles around to have our meat, because it was tender, and our nice sausages. But of course, when the war came and everything was rationed, everything was completely different then. It wasn't so free and easy when there was no war. Of course, when the war came and rationing came on, things became very difficult, very difficult.
And
I was responsible then for all the ration books of everybody.
And you held the ration books?
Yes.
Yes.
We held the ration books because there were so many outlying houses and with large families that they used to let us know what we wanted when there was 11 in the family, because they were allowed 11 pots of jam, whatever.
Yes. Yes.
And so they used to we used to say, what would you like next month? And they say, sort it up. So we would sort it up.
Yes, yes. Now, the master baker,
yes,
Mr. Farr,
yes,
he had, tell us about the little paddock with the kindling in it, or the bumps.
Oh, yes. Well, George Farr, he was responsible for the bakehouse, and he was responsible for the kindling bunts. But I can't remember where they came from now. And they were delivered every so often, and well, not only just stacked, they were delightfully stacked. They were always neat and tidy. It was, you know, quite a joy to pass by and feel it was really neat and tidy.
Yes, and the butcher had an abattoir and a holding pen?
Yes, yes, and he had holding pens where he perhaps buy sheep or cattle, whatever he wanted. And of course at Christmas time we had the old fashioned, all the turkeys and rabbits and everything hung outside for a week or more than they do today.
Yes.
And nobody was poisoned with the meat in those days, and
yeah,
it was really very, very good.
And you had to help once?
Oh yes, I had to help in the butcher shop. I helped make the sausages. I didn't do any cutting up of joints and that, but
no.
I just filled in the gap when one of the assistant was called up.
And once you helped by scrubbing the pig?
Oh yes, yes, I did that once, experience of knowing the job.
How did you confine the pig while you scrubbed it?
Well, he wasn't alive.
Oh, he was alive?
Oh no, he wasn't alive.
I'm with you.
He was in a little wooden tub, and you just scrubbed him all down, and then you had to shave him.
Tell us something about the things you sold in Wigginton and Herne in the wartime.
We just sold everything. And if people had more vegetable they wanted, we bought it and then sold it in the shop.
Yes.
But it wasn't so much in those days, because naturally people used it themselves or else gave it to friends or, you know, sold it themselves.
Yes.
Well, we sold whatever fruit was available. In those days, of course, there was very little foreign fruit about.
Yes.
But
and you stopped other than food?
Oh, yes, we stopped paraffin oil and methylated spirits and bran for rabbits. And if anybody wanted a reel of black cotton, they just tell us they want a reel of black cotton. We would have to go to the draper's shop two doors away and get the needles or pins or whatever people wanted, or tape or ribbon.
Oh, and it would all be delivered on the van?
All delivered on the van. People would say what they wanted, and then we'd have to go along and get it and then put it on the van. Because these outlying places, people just couldn't get in at every little different turn.
Yes, so people had an excellent service, didn't they?
Well, I think they did in those days.
A daily service up to Bowes Hill, up Lake.
Yes, with the boys on bicycles, yes.
Yes.
Well, it did relieve the ban to go on the outlying districts, you
yes,
see.
Yes, yes.
But we had one lady, I've forgotten what her address is now, but she had 11 children and she used to walk to Doors, go home loaded with her shopping, and perhaps she'd bring two children to help carry the bags. She didn't want it delivered. It's good for them to walk, she said.
Did you pay for delivery or was it free?
Oh, they didn't pay for it, it was just...
Yes.
That was in the service.
The service.
Oh yes, that was part of the service.
Yes.
Oh yes, no, we didn't charge for things. Yes, with whatever, although we didn't have many customers to come in and see it. But he always dressed the counter and had put when Anchor Butter came in. And every Friday, there was a pound missing off the show. And so he thought, oh, there's somebody having this. So he cut up two pieces of wood the size of the butter and wrapped it in butter paper and dressed the butter counter with this. And then one Friday, the wood went. And we never saw the lady after that. So that was shoplifting in our day. They up at Bow's Hill, and we always wrapped a special loaf for the lady because they never often failed her in, and they used to put it inside the lavatory. And one day she came down and complained because she said, I don't mind him leaving in the lavatory, she said, but I hate it when it falls in. Yes. At the corner of the shop, it was always called the Courting Couples Wall because the wall was heated because of the bakehouse there. And of course the bread was being cooked during the night and the wall stayed warm during the day. And that's where the courting couples used to be. And at Christmas time, people often brought their cakes down for Mr. Farr to put in the in the ovens to cook when he wasn't using the ovens. And on Christmas Day, two years running, he cooked two turkeys for people in Bow's Hill, and he took it up on Christmas Day already cooked. A little service we used to do for people.
Just tell us about the Miss Stubbingtons.
Well, they were very energetic ladies and very useful in the village because they seemed to keep everything going. Miss Grace Stubbington was the amateur dramatic lady, and she often put on plays. And during the war, of course, we went round entertaining the troops. And Miss and Grace Stubbington, I was always prompt because I was no good at acting. But on one occasion during the war, we were going to entertain the troops at Havant, and our little girl, the leading girl, she went down with appendicitis. And I was the only size that was her, and I had to get into her clothes and try and be the daughter. And I've never acted in my life, but I had to go on because we didn't want to let the troops down. And it was a very Victorian play, and I had a lovely old red satin dress, or taffeta, and it had all thousands of little buttons all down both sides, and was a muffin sleeve, and I had a bustle. And I went into the stage on Havant Congregational Hall, and it was full of troops. And when they saw me, somebody shouted out, oh, look, she's all done. And it frightened the life out of me. I fled off the stage. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Oh, I couldn't think of the words. But I didn't know the words, really. I was only a prompter. But we got through it, and they laughed. So as long as it caused a laugh.
And where else did you go to entertain the troops?
This was in the Havant
yes.
Congregational
yes.
Church Hall.
Yes.
And we went up to Tangmere, and I think that must have been in one of their halls there, because people used to say the bailiffs have gone into the Hearns, they've taken the furniture.
Oh.
Because with the van, we used to put the furniture in the van. We had two vans, and we used to put the furniture in one van and bring the
yes.
entertainers in the other one.
Oh, I see, yes.
Yes.
Oh, that worked beautifully.
They were furniture removed and all sorts. Miss Winifred's, well, yes, the Choral Society. And we had some wonderful evenings with her. And we took part in the musical festival at Petersfield under Vaughan Williams and Sir Charles Groves. And we had very, very happy occasions. And of course, giving a number of concerts, both musical and amateur dramatic, it really was something for the village, which most villages had never heard of, to be so fortunate to have two such lovely ladies.
Where did the Choral Society rehearse?
I think we met at Miss Stubbington's house.
I think you probably did, yes.
I think most of it was done at their house, other than when we...
And can you recall any of the performances, anything that you performed?
Oh dear. My brother and sister-in-law lived at Horndean, and he used to take part. He was... Oh dear. I know one concert we did, my husband had to remove his dentures, because he didn't have any dentures. So he used to, in the evening, practice putting cotton wool underneath to black his teeth out. And then they came in the shop the next day and said, "We do admire you for taking your teeth out last night." He said, "Oh, I didn't take my teeth out, I blacked them out." The tricks we used to get up to, which they do in the modern theatre today. And
absolutely.
Oh, dear me. Well, all I remember was there was an awful dogfight going on over there, over Portsmouth, and the gun firing. And then this bomber came over, and it came down down Woodbury Lane. And I went down to see if we could do anything to help. And Dr. Way had got there, and he said, "You can't do anything because they're all dead." And so, well, there was nothing else we could do. And I think it was the next day, a parachute gentleman came down, and I drove the air raid warden, who was Mr. Noble. I had to drive him round the Idswood Lane, watching this parachute come down. And when we got there, he said, "I didn't want to come to war, I don't want a war." And he was quite helpless, and so he, then we had to bring him back, and the army took over. That's what stopped actions for.
That's fine.
The two friends, the majors, we got to know them because in the village there was this big army camp that originally we had the men from Dunkirk, and when they were dispensed to their own stations, the American Army came, and these majors came with the American Army, and they had to train the men for warfare. And we had two billeted with us, and when they came in at night, they always wanted a bath because their backs were sore, where their part of their training for the men was to lay on barbed wire and let them walk over them, because they had got to train the men properly. And that was what would they might be expected to do, to harden themselves off, I suppose, really. They used to come home quite sore sometimes. But they took it, that was part of their training, but they didn't particularly like doing that, but it was their training. But they had come to go and fight. They didn't come to come and train people. But anyhow, they had to do their duty, and which they all did very well indeed. They were a very nice lot of gentlemen. Yes. Stop. Tell nobody else. Yes.
And the toilet.
Oh, well. Crabtree and Andrew were both wonderful soldiers, and they came really to fight, but unfortunately they were sent to Rowland's Castle, where they had to train men to go to war. But Anion was so keen, he really wanted to fight, because that's what he came for. And when the day came that they had to go, he went to war, and he went with his men, and he was one of the first killed. He was determined he was going to be in it. But Crabtree, he managed to come through, and he married an English wren that he had met he was at Rowland's Castle. And then they came back, and years afterwards they used to come back for a holiday in England, and they always came to see us. And one year, because we were supposed to be short of sugar and toilet rolls, they came with suitcases of sugar and toilet rolls because English people didn't have sufficient. And as we didn't require it in the south of England, we said, you take it to your friends in the Midlands, because evidently they are very short and we can't take food that, or the item, of course, that would do other people some good. To have a canning course with the WI over there, and it was very, very interesting. And I've forgotten the lady's name, but she gave her garage over and had it fitted out that we could be able to cool the cans when they were processed. And people brought their vegetables ready, prepared in the morning, and we put them in the tins and sterilized them and labeled them, and they came and collected them at tea time. And we never had any trouble with any blown tins or people being poisoned. It was all very hygienic as far as we were trained. We were trained to do it.
How many of you were doing the canning, do you remember?
I think one other person came over with me. But we had some of an institute that used just to come down to help with the cooling.
Yes, yes.
But the actual canning machine, we too did. Now I can't remember that lady's name. I think it was Mrs. Dwan. She lived halfway up Hillhead. Bowes Hill. She lived up Bowes Hill. Mrs. Dwan, she was a very nice lady. She worked quite hard for the Institute. My husband said, I want to do something completely different. And so said, so did I. And he said, what would you like to do? I said, well, as a child, I've always wanted to do lace making. He said, well, then make a start. Just like that. I thought, well, I haven't got anything yet to make a start with. And We used to belong to the RSPB, and we used to go down to the dinners of a bird reserve. We used to guard the peregrine and red kite's nest. We went down every Easter, and we had to guard the red kites because there were only four pairs in those days, and there were only two peregrine's nests. Mm. And we did that for about 16 years, go down every year for that. And we used to go down to the Brecon Beacons. My husband saw in an advertisement mountaineering for the over 60s. So he said, well, what about it? I said, well, have a go. We were 70, but we went. And we did all, well, my husband, he did the shorter one, but I did all the long hill climbing ones.
Really?
And on the Wednesday, the warden said, I'm going to give you all a piece of paper and I want you to put your ages down, but you don't need to give me your names. And we read them out. He said, 70? 70? They were absolutely staggered. They couldn't believe it. And we went down to the Brecon Beacons for 2 years. And then when we were there, the warden said to me, he wished he could have a cut, couldn't get a holiday because he can't leave these premises. Because I forget how many there was, about 20 of us. It was big premises, and they used to run these various courses on hill walking and various things. That was how we went down. And he said one day, I'd like to take my wife away, but my husband said, well, you only got to go and get a caretaker. He said, I can't leave these premises because of vandals, you see. So my husband said, well, you only need to get a caretaker. He said, well, where will I find a caretaker? So my husband said, we'll come down. And so then for about 4 years, we went down each year for them to go on a holiday. He came to my 100th birthday the other day, this gentleman.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful. How did you learn to drive, Doris?
Well, when I left school, I wanted to be a cake decorator. But in those days, you had to pay a premium. So we were poor in those days. We couldn't afford premiums. And then I went to Smee's in Clarendon Road to the florist, and I thought, oh, that'd be lovely, all looking after flowers, which I enjoy for a few weeks. And then 1 week we had a funeral at Chichester, and we had to do 12 wreaths. And when they gave me a big bowl of little violets and said, you've got to wire each one of those. I said, not these. Yes, they said, they were little very fine wires. And I went home to my mother and I said, dear, I can't do that. I can't be pricking wires in flowers. Anyhow, I stood it for a few weeks, but I didn't like it. But I was getting on. Before then, I decided to go in for nursing after that. Oh, and it was while I was doing these odd jobs that I had a shop assistant in the Strand. And opposite there was a garage, and I got very friendly with a fellow there. And he taught me to drive on a Lagonda. It didn't have a wheel, it had a steering bar. I can't remember much about that. Anyhow, I learned to drive. Of course, I've never taken a test.
What age were you at that time, roughly?
I suppose about 15, 16.
Right, yeah.
I must have been, I suppose, 16. Because when I was 17, I went to the John Horniman's convalescent home for children because I was going to take up nursing. Yeah. And I went there as a convalescent home with... for children. We used to be London children come down that had rickets and those sort of things. And then there was that very bad Welsh miners catastrophe. And so, and we were in Worthing, and so we used to have the children up from Wales, all in a very poor state. And people in Worthing were very kind. They used gave us a lot of clothes and everything we wanted for the children. And it was a John Horniman home. It was a Quakers. Horniman's the tea people, and they're Quakers. And this home had one side was boys and one side was girls. And they came down to the dining room, the boys that door and the girls that staircase. And they had their meals together, and then afterwards they went about upstairs. But when they come down, they all went into a big play group together, and we had to take them all on the beach together. But do not get their feet wet. Take any 30 children to the beach, not get their feet wet.
And how did you become a rally driver?
Oh, that was after the war. It was the first rally drafter after the war. The Daily Express ran it. And my husband said, why don't you go in for it? Because he couldn't take part, because he wouldn't be able to stand the... It was a 48-hour non-stop, one of those ones. And my brother-in-law, who was a teacher, and he got permission to come with me because our driving was ideal. We were suited to each other. And the Educational Office of Health gave him permission. And of course, time went on and we had to prepare everything. And then a fortnight before, they said they couldn't spare him. They'd got an emergency in the education and so they couldn't spare him. So a friend of ours said he'd take part. Well, I wasn't very keen because I just felt he wasn't quite suitable. Having been a nurse, I know you've got to stay awake all night and not go to sleep or get drowsy. But anyhow, because the arrangements were made, well, we had to go. And we went all around the Welsh mountains. There was a really gross pass. I don't know if you know of it. It's a very famous pass. But in those days, it was all loose gravel where it's tarmac today. And the one thing I did say was, whoever I drive with, I am going up really gross pass. Because I've been there many times and I know it's with the flints, you know what the driving's like. And we went all through it for 48 hours. And you have to check in at different points. And you mustn't get there early or else you lose points. Or if you get there late, you lose points. So you have to be terribly careful. And you lose points if your lights don't work. And you lose points if you've got some dents in your car and all this business. Quite a number of people went in the ditch. And anyhow, we went right sailing right through beautifully. And then at the end, you've got to take a driving test. So I took mine when we finished. And when my co-driver had to take his, he got out of the car and he couldn't stand up straight. So he couldn't take part. He got more like car drunk. And so we didn't pass.
Oh, how sad.
Yes. And his wife and two boys were waiting to come down to the finish when they'd heard we finished. And then, of course, the poor boys were disappointed. Dad had let them down, but he couldn't help it. I knew he wouldn't do it, 48 hours, if you're not used to.
What car were you driving?
A Morris Minor.
Oh, Morris Minor?
Yes.
Oh, what a wonderful story.
It was really lovely because we didn't have a scratch in our...
Can you tell me the names of any of the other shops and who owned them in Merlin Castle?
Frank Brooke was a baker. And next to him was Reg and Nance Burgess, who was the postmaster there. And there was Miles the bookshops. And Mrs. Somebody the draper there. She had a very nice little draper shop. And then coming up the green was, of course, the fountain and the railway. And then there was Ricketts on the corner of Lynx Lane. That shop there was Ricketts. What was next door to Miles then? There was another shop next door to Miles. And of course there was one on Bowes Hill there. But they changed hands a couple of times. I couldn't remember those names. I'm afraid I can't.
Yeah.
There wasn't much in those days, of course. No. We only hit the bit of... Oh, what's the name of the road now? Up the hill here, that road that goes off at Red Hill.
Which is Gate Road?
No, that's too far up. One halfway down Red Hill that was up. Ah, the drift, that's right. That's where the bricks were in the drift.
Yes, yes.
And the brickworks were there, and the flints came from evidently Dearloop House, where the castle or this folly was going to be built.
And who lived in Dearloop when you were here?
Admiral Callaghan.
Yes. Can you remember anything about the Admiral?
Well, only that he was a lovely old gentleman.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yes, we used to visit him. No, I'm afraid I can't.
No, that's fine. Did your family have anything to do with Stansted College?
No, no.
But your father
in law, he was a Congregational minister.
Yes.
No, we were not Church of England. You see, in those days it was very different whether you were Church of England or whether you were nonconformist.
But tell me about the playing of the chess.
Well, only that my husband and my father-in-law used to go down perhaps twice a week and play either chess or bridge with the old boys.
Yes, and they enjoyed doing it?
Oh, yes. They looked forward to it.
Yes.
I'm not yet, but so I went in and I said, "How much are they?" She said, "Oh, £1.29 each." I said, "Oh, thank you very much. I want 20, so thank you very much." And I came out quicker than I went in. And I'd already had books from the library to read about it, and we'd taken them on our holiday, you see. And I hadn't been there two or three days, and my husband had made some, whittled them out of bits of wood he found in the shed. And so then I had to do it, didn't I? My husband spent his time doing that and made some. And then he made practically all my bobbins after that, even bone ones. I used to buy beef bones and boil them and dry them off. And then he'd make bobbins. Oh, I had hundreds in the end. And he would make it wood, and then he would paint on the wood or burn in the wood that it was.
Oh, I see, yes. So you had the name of the tool.
Yes, and on the bone ones, he used to always put the old Passion Welsh patterns on them.
Really?
And then he wrote his own things. He put one, "I love a woman driver." And then it said, another one was, "Women liberated."
And how many pieces of lace did you make? Have you any idea?
Oh, yes, because my husband, when I went for lace making, he came to West Dean College in Chichester, and he thought, oh, what about wood carving? And so he took wood carving, and he wished he'd done wood carving all his life. He was absolutely gifted for it. And so he made all my bobbins. And of course, we could then go around and talk about lace making, and he'd talk about the wood. And
some wonderful partners. A note by the interviewer. Mrs. Hearn told me that her husband took a photo of the VE Day celebrations, bonfire and fireworks down on the village green, and sent it up to the Daily Mirror, where he won first prize for his photo. Thank you.